I do this because I want the fans to know that Elvis was not a druggy, fat guy whose career was going downhill. I want him to know that he was actually a hero, that he saved lives, that, you know, I feel like it's kind of an obligation at this point that I think the fans should know the true Elvis.
Ladies and gentlemen, we know.
The thing is, what kind of powers are you going up against? If Elvis is in witness protection program, then it's the government's job to make sure he stays safe and hidden. So how much power are you actually fighting? You're fighting possibly the federal government. You're fighting Elvis Presley Enterprises, because they're certainly making a lot more money with him being dead than they would be if he hadn't died. There's not a day that goes by that I'm not amazed at things that I find dealing with this investigation. We had the Presley Commission, the Presley Report, and I feel like I was carrying the torch on for these people, and so I came up with the Presley Assignment because I feel like it's an assignment that I need to complete. You know, I don't say things that I can't back up with some kind of documentation or photographs or something. So I know that I have myself covered, but they have turned it into a joke. So most of the world that only hears what they want them to hear, that don't really dig in and investigate, they think that I have to be crazy.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, Banal of America Audio with your host, Tim Banal.
What is going on, my friends? This is Tim Banal of banalofamerica.com with another edition of BOA Audio Season 8. On this edition of the program, we are going to go where so many other programs fear to tread, as we dare to explore one of the most maligned and ridiculed, but also under-discussed and overlooked stories in all of esoterica, the Elvis death hoax theory, with our guest, Mickey Moran, who has been studying the case for over 25 years and helms the website, The Presley Assignment. Over the course of this massive conversation, we are going to learn about why Elvis would fake his death in the first place and the evidence that Mickey believes proves that Elvis faked his death. We'll also hear about Elvis's dealings with the DEA, DNA testing, a pool house photo which purports to show a post-death Elvis, odd Elvis autopsy details, and witnesses who report eerie interactions with Elvis and his inner circle, both before and after his alleged death. Beyond that, we're also going to go meta in the latter half of this program and explore the Is Elvis Alive movement. We're going to trace its evolution from August 16th, 1977 up to the present day. And over the course of that discussion, we'll learn about all of the various twists, turns, highs, and lows which the community has seen, as well as the many colorful characters who have populated the movement over the last 35 years. Altogether, this is a comprehensive edition of the program which will provide BOA audio listeners with an intense education on a truly unconventional subject that has been almost criminally discounted from the modern esoteric canon, the Elvis Presley death hoax, with Mickey Moran, the man behind the Presley Assignment. For those of you who are unfamiliar with Mickey Moran, please allow me to take a moment and provide you with some background on him. Having a unique love and appreciation for the music of Elvis Presley from a very young age, Mickey Moran has always been a devoted fan of the king of rock and roll. But after reading Gail Brewer Giorgio's book, Is Elvis Alive?, some 25 years ago, Mickey has been on a quest to finally answer the question once and for all. Did Elvis Presley actually fake his death, on August 16, 1977. Using the far-reaching power of the internet and his own investigative abilities, Mickey has devoted much of his life in pursuit of that question and debunking those frauds who would either claim to be the man himself or know the man in hiding after he left the world stage. Mickey has written a definitive text on the phenomenon of one of the most talked-about conspiracies of the 20th century in the Elvis Presley Encyclopedia, which gathers facts and details from various sources under one cover and acts as a one-stop shop for those wanting to learn more about the events of that day in August 1977. He also hosts his own weekly YouTube show covering various topics related to the conspiracy, which can be found on YouTube by searching for The Presley Assignment. He also has a Facebook group where he invites discussion on the various aspects of the conspiracy, and, of course, he has his own website at www.thepresleyassignment.com. All one word, pretty simple, thepresleyassignment.com. Check it out. And, with all that said, let's get down to business, my friends, and rock and roll. This interview was recorded on November 12, 2013, Mickey Moran, talking about the Elvis death hoax theory on BOA Audio, Season 8. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another edition of BOA Audio, Season 8, and we are about to embark on what I think will be a much-discussed edition of the program. I am dying to dig into this topic. A couple of years ago, we discussed the Michael Jackson death hoax with Pearl Jr., but that was really the tip of the iceberg. Now we're going to talk about the big daddy of death hoax theories, which is the Elvis Presley death hoax. And it's famous. It's been around for ever since August 77, some might say, but certainly right afterwards. And if you're like me, you've heard about this, and often, you know, it gets the short end of the stick, let's face it, folks. We'll talk about that with our guest here as we get into it. But you've obviously heard of the Elvis death hoax, but if you're like me, chances are you really don't know anything about it. And I've spent quite a bit of time in the last day or so really digging into this in preparation for this conversation and was fascinated by the material there. And hopefully by the time you're done listening to all this, you no longer will say, yeah, I've heard about the Elvis thing, but I don't really know anything about it. You'll know quite a bit about it, because our guest is the man behind the website, The Presley Assignment, and he's been looking at this for quite some time, decades, folks. Since around 1988, he's been looking into the Elvis death hoax conspiracy, and he's got a wealth of information about this whole story. And as I said, probably as you can tell just from my voice so far, I am very excited about exploring this topic with him. Mickey Moran, welcome to BOA Audio. Let's get down to business, pal.
Thanks for having me on your show. I am also excited to be doing this.
Excellent. That makes two of us then, right?
Exactly.
Now, we generally start out the program with the standard bio background. You know, tell me, who is Mickey Moran? How did you get interested in all this? How did you gravitate towards, you know, the Elvis death hoax theory?
Sure. When I was 8 years old, which was the summer after Elvis supposedly passed away, my family took me to Graceland on vacation. Graceland Mansion, of course, was not open to the public yet, but you could walk past the graves. They had a lot of memorabilia. We got to go around Memphis. We actually went to Elvis's birthplace down in Tupelo, Mississippi, and I became a huge Elvis fan on that day when I was 8 years old. For the next 10 years, I was just a huge Elvis fan. I listened to his music all the time, watched his movies. But when I was 18 years old, my best friend came to my house knowing what an Elvis fan I was. And this was shortly after graduating from high school. And he came and told me about this book, Is Elvis Alive?, that was written by Gail Brewer Giorgio. And he told me a little bit about what was in the book. He had read it. And he really captured my attention. I sat down and read this book in one sitting. Mm-hmm. And some of the points that were made even way back then, of course, so much more has been discovered since 1988, but even way back then, there were so many points that she made that pointed to Elvis being alive. So I became fascinated with this. So I started doing this when I was 18. And I've been doing this for 25 years. And there's not a day that goes by that I'm not amazed at things that I find dealing with this investigation.
Yes, it's fascinating. I mean, I'll be honest with you. Like I said at the beginning, it gets the short end of the stick sometimes. Well, most of the time in the paranormal conspiracy community. But it's pretty interesting stuff. Let's bring folks, I guess, up to speed. We've done the bio in the background. Let's bring them a little bit up to speed, because Elvis, you know, whether or not he died, the mainstream says he died in 1977, which is 35 years ago. So we're coming at listeners here who probably may have been born, you know, not even in 77, halfway there. You know what I'm saying? We got like 15-year-old listeners listening to the program who to them, Elvis is more myth than man. So I guess talk a little bit about the official version of events, and then we'll get into contrasting it with what you believe really happened. You know, give us a little thumbnail for the youngsters, you know, on who Elvis was. Because I kind of liken it. I was talking to a young cousin of mine trying to explain sort of just the Michael Jackson mania of the 80s. But Elvis, you know, dwarfed all that. So it's interesting, you know, to sort of bring people up to speed on what his trajectory was like, and then we'll visit his death.
Absolutely. Well, you know, the primary point that got this whole thing started back in the day was that someone noticed that Elvis's middle name was misspelled on his grave marker at Meditation Garden in Graceland. And, of course, Elvis was born Elvis Aaron Presley, with his middle name being spelled A-R-O-N. And that's on his birth certificate, his army induction papers, his marriage license to Priscilla, all of his important documents, all of his son record contracts, everything was A-R-O-N. But someone noticed that his grave marker at Graceland was spelled A-A-R-O-N. That got the conspiracy started. That's the first point that everyone noticed back then. Later, it was discovered that not only is Elvis's middle name misspelled at Meditation Garden, but so is his twin brother, Jesse, who was stillborn. He has a grave marker at Graceland. Now, his grave is empty. It is just a memorial marker because Jesse is actually buried in Tupelo, Mississippi. But they put a marker up for him at Graceland.
Okay.
Now, Jesse's birth certificate and everything that you've ever seen written about Jesse is spelled J-E-S-S-E. But the memorial marker at Graceland is J-E-S-S-I-E. Now,
weird.
The belief is that, you know, Jesse's grave is empty. We know that at Meditation Gardens. And we believe that it's a hint that the misspelled markers are meaning empty grave.
They're
not buried there. So that's what got the whole thing started back in the day. And, of course, so much has, you know, transpired since then.
Oh, yeah. This story has it's an amazing story. Just the Elvis death hoax theory is an amazing story. So, yes, we'll, this is amazing stuff. Sorry to interrupt you. Go ahead.
But, you know, Elvis was born January the 8th, 1935. Now, on January the 10th, 1935, a birth certificate was issued with his name spelled A-A-R-O-N, just as it is on his grave marker. But Elvis's parents, Vernon and Gladys, did not want it spelled that way. So a new birth certificate was issued 2 days later on January the 12th, 1935, with the correct spelling of A-R-O-N, which voided the first birth certificate. Now, Elvis, people that understand Elvis, and I'm going to tell you, try to make you understand, Elvis always felt such a strong connection to his twin that was stillborn. And because the twin didn't get to live, and because Elvis had two birth certificates, with two different spellings of his middle name, he always felt that he had two destinies to fulfill, one for himself and one for his brother. Now, one of these destinies was entertainer, that we all know, and the other one we will get into, I'm quite sure, in this interview, is his love for law enforcement, which is going to play a big deal in what we're going to discuss today.
Okay.
That is another huge point that we need to dig into some.
Absolutely, yeah. We'll get into that. So I guess just to revisit the jumping off point here from earlier, I guess tell me what the mainstream tells us happened to him that night that he died. He was kind of a, from my understanding, again, I was born 2 years after the events of August 1977, almost 2.5 years. So, you know, what do they say happened? It's the big joke that he died on the toilet. So it's just kind of a sad thing about it all. But I guess, what do they say happened? My understanding was that he was sort of in a career tailspin, or he sort of wasn't, you know, he needed a comeback, if you will, and then he died, you know, eerily similar to how the whole Michael Jackson thing kind of unfolded.
Correct. Well, there are so many different stories about what happened August 16th, 1977, the day he supposedly died, and the night before, on August the 15th. So, basically, there are a lot of different stories here, a lot of timeline mix-ups of stories, but basically, Elvis went to the dentist late night on August the 15th. There are no dental records to show this, but I'm telling you the story that we're told is he went to the dentist about 10 p.m. on August the 15th, 1977. Now, he was wearing his DEA jogging suit, which we will get into that, when he went out to go to the dentist. And there were pictures of him returning to Graceland, driving his car with his DEA jogging suit on, when he was coming back, and he got back. Most accounts tell us it was somewhere between midnight and 2 a.m. Nobody has been able to pinpoint exactly the time, but he came back through the gates of Graceland, and he went in, and he invited a couple of people over to be with him and Ginger to play racquetball at the racquetball court there at Graceland.
Mm-hmm.
They played some racquetball, then he went and sang some songs on the piano. And then in the early morning hours, maybe around 4 a.m., we're told, they went up to the, him and Ginger went to the bedroom and read for a while. And then about 9 a.m., of course, Elvis always stayed up all night and slept all day. That was his routine. So about 9 a.m., he went into the bathroom to read so that he could turn out the lights in the bedroom so Ginger could sleep. So he goes in there to read. He did have a black lounge chair in there that he used for reading most of the time. So we don't know if he was on the toilet. We don't know if he was in the black lounge chair.
Yeah.
But he did have a lounge chair in there. That's where he did his reading. And about 2 p.m., Ginger wakes up from her sleep, notices Elvis is not in the bed. She goes to check on him. And then there's like 25 different stories as to how she got
yeah.
help upstairs, and
yeah.
it gets really crazy at that point. But she found the body, and
yeah, he's dead at this point. You know, that's
yeah,
I guess
he's
that's
dead
the,
at this yeah. point. So yeah, that's the official story. Of course, there's so many different curves here that you can take as to what the story was.
Right, exactly. We kind of had to establish the baseline though for folks
yeah.
as we get into this. Now, first of all, what's going on with the weird dentist visit? Who goes to the dentist at 10 at night? And I guess if you're a super rich celebrity, you can, but otherwise,
you can.
Why?
Well, this is where we run into problems. You have Elvis's stepbrother says that he had a loose crown that he had to go get fixed. Another story from one of the members there at Graceland was he had a filling cavity that needed to be filled. One person said he needed his teeth cleaned because he was leaving the next day to go on tour. And then the dentist himself, the doctor, says he filled two cavities and cleaned his teeth. So we don't know exactly.
Weird.
Those are the stories that we've been told.
So, but he was so, okay, so now I just picked up another bit here. So now he's supposed to go on tour literally the next day, and but
he was,
they, But they find him dead. Weird.
Right. The day they find him, he was to leave on tour. Everyone was packed, ready to get on a plane, and he was leaving to go on tour.
See, like, all of the synchronicity, the serendipity of it all makes it all very suspicious, too. It's very, very odd. Now, okay, so we've established the mainstream version of all this. Now, what do you think actually happened? What do you think was going down there, you know, in August of 77 when this happened?
August of 77, Elvis was involved in some very deep, which we haven't discussed yet. He was involved in some very deep undercover work with the federal government.
Yeah, you've been teasing this already. I can tell that this is a big linchpin of your work. So let's find out about this.
Elvis was receiving multiple death threats from several popular organizations of the time. You're talking Black Panthers, Weathermen Underground, Mafia. He was getting some very serious death threats because of his involvement with the federal government. Elvis actually had a undercover agent that traveled with him for about 2 years that posed as a member of his band because he was working in sting operations.
Yeah.
So in August, he was receiving so many death threats, and these are available. You can see a lot of these in the FBI file on Elvis. There are 663 pages of FBI files on Elvis. They're available to download for free from my website. And you can see a lot of the death threats that he was getting. And again, not just against himself, but against Priscilla and little Lisa Marie, who was 9 years old at the time.
Yeah.
So I think he had to go into hiding to save some lives.
Hmm. Is it possible? Now let's twist it around though. Where he's getting these death threats, he dies. Is it possible there's a connection there?
Well,
maybe he's poisoned or something. Who knows? You know, I'm sure you've been asked this question about 1,000 times. But
I've actually looked into that. But there are so many things pointing to him living past August 16th, 1977, that I don't see that as a possibility. There was a 2020 special done that Geraldo Rivera did that looked into Elvis being murdered.
Well, you can't trust Geraldo.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, what happened when he opened the safe, right?
Exactly, yeah. Okay, so
there's too many things pointing to him still being alive after that date for me to lean toward murder on that, so.
Okay. Well, yeah, you point that out, and then there's the website, elvisconspiracy.webs.com is fantastic. Like I said, I've spent quite a bit of time digging into this, and I'm sure I only really scratched the surface because my time was limited before we got a chance to talk, but I dove in both feet first. for real, and I think the folks listening definitely should too because it's awesome stuff. And you say that in there that Elvis did have many reasons to fake his death beyond the mob thing.
Oh yeah, yeah. Elvis is everybody knows has heard the stories of Elvis's drug use and drug abuse and all of these things. These things were so highly exaggerated. And in 1977, Elvis fired several members of his entourage, the Memphis Mafia, because he felt that he couldn't trust them anymore. So they got together and wrote a book called Elvis, What Happened, and man, they totally exaggerated so many things about his drug use. Elvis actually admitted on stage one time in front of a live audience, and I think this is out there on YouTube actually, that he was a federal agent. He was not into drugs the way the media was making him out to be. That he would not be allowed to carry a badge if he was doing all of these drugs. This was so highly exaggerated. But he was extremely worried about his image because of people believing about the drugs, his weight gain. Of course, he was very vain about his looks. He had gained some weight. He hadn't had a number one hit song in several years. Elvis actually said one time, a quote of his is, "I don't want to be up on some stage when I'm 40 singing Heartbreak Hotel."
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, he had several reasons that he was ready to break away. The death threats were part of it. But he had a lot of things weighing on his mind at that time.
Right, right. I can imagine. I mean, we're talking about the late 70s. Elvis was really big in the 60s, of course, but
a lot of the stars from the previous decade were kind of faltering toward the end of the 70s. You know, you see right. a lot of the ones who survived and made it had really terrible down periods in the 80s and stuff, especially, you know, with the MTV. It blew away all the classic rock, if you will. So I can imagine he was sort of facing the same looming future that befell a lot of these other stars.
Exactly.
Yeah.
He felt that.
Exactly. Like, look at Paul McCartney. He was in Wings in the 80s. You know, Elvis probably,
yeah.
Elvis probably didn't want to get mixed up in that kind of scenario. On the Elvis Mysteries section on the thing, you point out a couple of, on the webpage, you point out a couple of interesting ones that were really intriguing. You say here, 2 hours after Elvis's death was announced publicly, a man who reportedly looked remarkably like Elvis purchased a ticket for Buenos Aires, paid in cash, and used the name John Burroughs, the name Elvis had used as an alias several times before. Where does this come from? That's amazing stuff.
Yeah, that is amazing stuff. This actually came from two sources. One was Gail Burgiorgio, when she was doing her investigation, ran across this information, and also a veteran police detective investigator named Monty Nicholson discovered this at the same time. They both actually wrote books on this, and they had never met each other, and their books were almost identical. So
weird.
It is really interesting to read both of those. But the thing is, you know, Elvis had written a letter to President Nixon while he was on a flight with American Airlines to go see President Nixon. He was so confident in being who he was, he thought, I can just fly to the White House and I can go in and see the president. And so he wrote this letter to President Nixon saying he wanted to be a federal agent at large. He was very concerned with the hippie movement and the drug movement of the time. This was in 1970. And he wrote a 5-page letter that got him invited into the Oval Office. But on this letter, he wrote, I'm staying at the Washington Hotel, rooms such and such and such and such, under the name John Burroughs. So we have evidence this was an alias that he used, and someone using the alias John Burroughs purchased this ticket. So it all just kind of flows together, you know?
Yeah, that's a great way of putting it. That's kind of what I noticed as I read more and more about this. I mean, that's just one little tidbit. There's tons of stuff here. There's tons of really weird evidence, let's say, that Elvis faked his death. Talk a little bit, talk about, you know, I'm sure you get confronted with this all the time. So, you know, it's sort of a softball question, but it's also the one I'm sure you have to answer all the time. But what is the best evidence for this? So people can fire back if they get confronted with this question, if the subject comes up. What is the best evidence here that this actually went down?
Best evidence
mm-hmm.
is DNA testing.
Okay.
I can go into that for you. In 1997, a man named Bill Beeney, who owned the Elvis is Alive Museum up in Wright City, Missouri, he had been into this Elvis is Alive thing for quite a while. I mean, he had put a museum together. He had recreated the casket scene, everything in this museum. And he had been convinced for a long time Elvis was alive, but he wanted to prove it to himself. He wanted solid evidence.
Right.
So he had a DNA test performed, and this was turned in as a paternity suit. He did not say, you know, I'm running the DNA of Elvis. Elvis's name was not used. It was actually sent through as Aaron Civil. And all of the LabCorp reports that show the results of the test are on my website. But he wanted to prove to himself that Elvis was alive. So he went to Baptist Memorial Hospital in Memphis, which is where Elvis went when he needed treatment for anything.
Mm-hmm.
Elvis had had a liver biopsy done in 1975 at Baptist Memorial Hospital, and the samples are there, and they're labeled and controlled, you know, circumstances. He goes there, and this is also the same hospital that performed the autopsy on the body that we have been told was an autopsy on Elvis.
Okay.
He had the 1975 liver biopsy tissue tested against the body they did the autopsy on, tissue from this.
Right. Let me stop you 1 second. How did he get his hands, because how did he just show up at the hospital and get the access to this material?
He didn't go there to get the access. A doctor did this for him.
Okay.
He had a doctor do this, and it's actually in Bill Beeny's book about the doctor and everything.
Isn't that illegal? I'm not, you know, I'm just trying to, like, wrap my mind around how this all went down. Like, how did, well, you know, shouldn't the doctor go to jail for, like, isn't that kind of some kind of theft or something?
Well, back then I thought the same way. I thought, well, you know, how did he do this? Maybe he faked it. I'm going to tell you how. I don't think that's the case here in a second. But anyway, he had these tested and they did not match. The Elvis's tissue from his liver biopsy did not match the body they did the autopsy on. And for 5 years, from 97 to 2002, the world that knew about this, the people that knew about this, thought, okay, Bill Beeny faked this in order to get business at his museum, mm-hmm. to sell a book, whatever. But in 2002, Fox News picked up on this. And they went to the hospital. And if you look on my YouTube channel, I have the actual news broadcast. It shows them going into the hospital. It shows them getting the labeled sample off of the, you know, shelf or whatever at the hospital.
Right.
And if it was illegal, I don't think Fox News would have broadcast it.
Yeah, okay.
I'm sure there are some certain stages you can go through to get this done legally. So
yeah, maybe the hospital was like, listen, we'll do it if you all just stop, you know, maybe they thought they could put an end to all this by participating. Okay, yeah.
But anyway, Fox News did a three-way DNA test because there's a gentleman out there that calls himself Jesse, which is Elvis's twin brother's name that was stillborn, and he says he's really Elvis Presley. And he has some people convinced that he's Elvis Presley. And there's a website about that out there, all dedicated to this Jesse character.
And we'll have him on next week. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, yeah. Find him. Yeah, I want to talk to this guy. But they did a three-way DNA test. They asked Jesse, Fox News asked Jesse, mm-hmm. to send in some DNA samples of himself. So he sent in a pair of blue jeans that had blood on them. And he also sent in a fingerprint card of his fingerprints. So Fox News did a three-way DNA test. They did Jesse against the 1975 liver biopsy of Elvis, and then against the body they autopsied. All three were different. There was no match in any of those. And they tested Jesse's fingerprint card. They matched it to Elvis's fingerprint card, and no match. So I don't know who this Jesse guy is, but I do know that there have been two DNA tests that show Elvis did not match the body they autopsied, and one was done by Fox News. So I know that one was done legitimately. So it backs up what Bill Beeny did way back in 97.
Here's a weird question. I'm sure you spend I'm positive that you've spent a long time pondering this, much longer than I have. If we follow that narrative, then there's a body somewhere that they somehow got to do the autopsy. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That kind of blows up the whole idea of that they just faked it and didn't have a body at hand to pass off to some kind of medical authority. So do you have any theories on, you know, I'm sure you don't know specifically who the person was that they used.
I don't know who the person was.
But do you have any theory on how that all went down?
Well, I do believe that there was a double body used in place of Elvis, even at Graceland. And the reason I believe that, there were two paramedics with unit number 6 in Memphis that were called to Graceland on August 16, 1977. The two paramedics was Ulysses Jones and Charlie Crosby. Both of these men said that it was not Elvis on that bathroom floor when they got to Graceland. So I believe there was a body used that they were hoping to fool people with. Hmm. But, you know, the autopsy itself that was performed on this body, the stomach contents were destroyed pre-autopsy. There were no photographs taken. There were no dental imprints taken. There were no fingerprints taken. They did not want this body to be identified. All we have is the word of the coroner at this point as to who that was.
Weird.
So I do believe there was a double. There's too many stories as to who the double could have been to even try to pinpoint anybody. But.
Okay. But so, yeah, I presume there are stories, yeah. All right. I'm loving this so far, so bear with me. If I interrupt you, it's just because I'm so excited I want to get to another question on these things. Okay, so, but that all went down, the DNA stuff went down, as you said, like in the late 90s. So talk a little bit about the clues and stuff and the evidence that emerged in the 2 decades between the alleged death and the DNA testing. Because that's really what fueled this whole movement for 2 decades.
Sure. One of the primary things was Elvis's work in law enforcement. In the 1960s, Elvis became a member of several police organizations. Some were on a city level, some were a county level with sheriff's departments. He had several badges. And as I mentioned, he was very concerned about the drug movement. During the 1960s, Elvis was tied up in movie contracts all the time. And he didn't get to get out and tour or do anything until 1968 when he did his comeback special, because from the time he got out of the Army in 1960 until he did the comeback special, he was just doing movies and movie soundtracks. So a lot of other groups came out and took over what he considered his music, which was rock and roll.
Right, right. He was sort of the bridge between up until like the Beatles and everything, right?
Right, right, exactly. And he was very concerned about the reputation rock and roll was getting, because all of these new groups coming out were so into drugs, you know, the Woodstock thing. He was very concerned about all this. So he got involved with a lot of police organizations. And then in 1970, he wrote the letter to President Nixon when he used the name John Burroughs, and he was invited to the Oval Office. And he asked to be a federal agent at large because he felt that he could get in places that other people couldn't, because he would be trusted by these people.
Right.
So the president, Nixon at the time, made him special assistant for the Bureau of Narcotics and Dangerous Drugs, which we know today as the DEA. It has changed to DEA. And Elvis got involved in some sting operations. One in particular was Operation Fountain Pen. That was ran by a man named Frederick Peter Perot, and you can find his name throughout half of Elvis's files, FBI files on him.
Mm-hmm.
But Elvis got involved deeply with this guy trying to bust him, and his organization was called the Fraternity, that he led a bunch of criminals. And Elvis got deep into this, and as I say, I think that's one of the things that led to him having to go away and hide. But as far as evidence that popped up, there's so much. The medical examiner's report that was written post-autopsy of the findings, that, you know, what they found in the autopsy, this medical examiner's report has been examined by a graphologist named Mr. Wiest, and a video of him talking about this is on my YouTube channel. But he has shown that Elvis actually filled out his own medical examiner's report. It's in his handwriting. And he shows how he compares. He actually used the letter that Elvis wrote to Nixon to compare to this medical examiner's report. And he examines the spacing between the letters, the slant of the letters, the shape of the letters. And he's determined that Elvis actually wrote his own medical examiner's report after autopsy. So
weird.
That's a huge clue, you know?
Yeah.
I know that you've been digging into the website, so you probably read about the Lloyd's of London insurance policy.
Mm-hmm.
Elvis had 3 life insurance policies. 2 of those were paid-up policies, which means he owned those. He could cash them in at any time he wanted. And those 2 life insurance policies were cashed in. There's a 3rd policy through Lloyd's of London that was not a paid-up policy. So if it were to be cashed in and the person were still alive, that would be felony insurance fraud.
Right.
So to this day, this policy has not been cashed in, although at the time of Elvis's passing, Graceland was in huge financial trouble. They only had $500,000 left to upkeep this house, take care of everything, and you know, they would have cashed in this policy.
Right, right. It's not like they didn't know about it or anything.
Right.
But so by cashing in the ones that were already paid up, they were it wasn't illegal?
It wasn't illegal. Elvis owned them. He could have cashed them in.
Yeah, but it's not fraud if he's even if he's faking his death just because they already paid it off.
Right.
Weird.
Yeah, I mean, he could have cashed him. He could have walked in and cashed him in pre, you know.
Before. Oh, okay. I see what you're saying, yeah.
Because he actually owned these policies. They were paid in full.
Okay. All right. All right. Well, now, I thought it was interesting, you mentioned on the mysteries part that he telephoned a friend of his named Miss Foster and kind of alluded to that he was going to fake his death. Were there sort of clues leading up to all this that, you know, beyond the Miss Foster call? Of course, tell us that story, but you know, what other sort of stuff were leading into the death that might give us insight into what actually happened?
Yes, well, Elvis met a woman named Ellen Foster that reminded him very much of his mother. And they talked on the phone quite a bit after they met, and he felt like he could talk to her. You know, his mother passed away many, many years ago, and he was looking for someone he could talk to outside of his entourage, and they built a rapport. He trusted her, and they talked quite a bit. And I think it was the day before he was to go on tour on August 16th, 1977. He had called Miss Foster and told her not to believe the things that she was about to read in the paper, that he was fine. He was not going to be going on his tour tomorrow. And she said, "Are you sick?" And he said, "No, I've never felt better in my life. Some things are about to come to an end that I've been waiting for." And then, of course, later she came out and told the story about this.
Yeah.
That's a huge clue. He said this to a lot of people. I mean, on stage one time he said, "You know, I may not look good tonight, but I'm going to look good in my coffin." And he said the same thing to his stepbrother. You know, "I may not look good today, but I'm going to look good in my casket." He left clues. I mean, there were hints left around all over the place.
Interesting. Yeah, it's very there's a lot of strange. Like I said, this thing is very strange. Do you feel any under any pressure in a sense? Like it's always sort of the idea of, did he have a plan to come back at some point? And it's sort of like the old time traveler thing. If there are time travelers, where are they? If it's like if Elvis did fake his death, where has he been the last 35 years? What's he waiting for? Do you think that there's a plan for him to reemerge or no?
I think he wants to. Now, of course, I haven't spoken to him, so
yeah,
it's my personal belief that he wants to, but he's not sure. You know, there were some pretty heavy organizations after this guy to kill him, and if he let himself be known now, if he really went away because his daughter's life was in danger or Priscilla's life was in danger, and he came back now, would he put them back in danger? You know, it's not a point of whether he wants to come back, it's whether he feels safe doing it.
Because he would only be like in his, what, late 70s, 80s, or something like
78.
That?
78.
Yeah, 78 years old. So, I mean, it's entirely plausible that he could still come back. Now, what about his family? What about sort of not just the family, I guess, but also the close associates? Did any of them, it would be presumed that they would be in on all this. Did they ever give any indication? Did they ever tip their hand a little bit that maybe there was something else going on that that you're talking about that the mainstream refuses to mention?
Yeah, well, there's been a lot of mistakes made. As I mentioned earlier, he fired several of his entourage members right before he passed away that had been with him for many, many years. And I think he was cleaning house of the ones that maybe couldn't be trusted with this information. So that they wouldn't be around on this day. And then he kept the ones that he thought could be trusted to keep the secret. Now, there have been some that have came forward and told what happened and then changed their story later, such as Marty Lacker, who was a member of the Memphis Mafia with Elvis, and he was also one of the witnesses for Elvis and Priscilla's wedding. He did a story for People, I don't know, maybe 15 years ago, that said Elvis was alive, he faked his death, he ran off with a mystery woman named Maria, they sneaked off in the back of a van, and then later he says, "Oh, I just made that up, that was fiction." So, you know, I think people have tried to come forward and then something or someone has changed their mind. You know, Priscilla has made mistakes in, like, interviews. Like, she was on Oprah. She she was talking about Elvis. Now, this was just a couple of years ago, okay? Elvis has been gone, what, 35 years?
Right.
And she was doing an interview with Oprah, and they were talking about how Elvis babied Lisa Marie when she was little and how he bought her too much stuff and all this. And she was talking to Oprah about Elvis, and she said, you know, he said just the other day, and then she caught herself.
Oh, weird.
Yeah. There's a video clip of this on my YouTube channel. People have made mistakes, and they've corrected themselves. Joe Esposito's never had a story straight since this whole thing started.
Who's that?
He was Elvis's road manager and a member of the Memphis Mafia. They called him Diamond Joe. He was supposedly one of the first people to make it to Elvis's body from downstairs of Graceland after Ginger discovered the body.
Hmm.
Now, he has told in interviews, and all this is on my YouTube channel. You can watch. I don't hold anything back. So, I mean, he has told that Elvis was found in the bed. Elvis was found in the bathroom floor. He has told that Elvis was in full rigor mortis and liver mortis and had turned blue. But he's also told that he gave the body CPR and heart massage, which, you know, I think it would be a little late, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, he has made so many mistakes over the years that he probably should have just not never been involved in an interview. But, he's made his mistakes. And then, you know, I know that you know, the audience may not, that we're talking to, you know about the pool house photo.
Yeah, yeah, that's in the notes for later, but we can talk about it now.
Okay. There was a gentleman named Mike Joseph that went on vacation with his family to Graceland for New Year's Eve, 1977, just a few months after Elvis supposedly passed away, and he was taking photos of the grounds, the graves, you know, everything, and he put his pictures away, didn't think anything more about it, had his vacation pictures, and about 3 or 4 years later, he was going through his photographs, and he noticed a shadow in the doorway of the pool house behind Graceland, right next to Meditation Garden. And he got his son's magnifying glass and started pulling it away from this picture and noticed a silhouette in the doorway. And when he pulled it far enough, he noticed it looked just like Elvis. And he was actually he's on a video on my YouTube channel also talking about this. And he said, oh my God, I can't believe it. I have Elvis Presley on film looking out at his fans walking past his grave. And later he changed his story. He said he was on Larry King, I believe. And he said, I never said that. No, I don't believe that was Elvis. But I've got the video of him saying it.
Yeah.
It's on my YouTube channel. So many people have just changed their stories. And I don't know if they're being paid to change their story, if they're being scared in changing their stories, if they're I can't speculate there, but it happens a lot.
Well, there's a lot of heat involved in this whole theory. I can imagine that they might get enough grief that they're like they want to, you know, turn or run away from it. So I can see that being a motivator as well. Now, talk a little bit about the National Enquirer's role in all this, because the photo of Elvis in the casket is famous, and I see here in your notes that phone records show that Ginger Alden, Elvis's girlfriend at the time of his alleged death, phoned the National Enquirer 1 to 3 hours before calling downstairs for help when she found Elvis on the bathroom floor. Which, if we just separate that from the death hoax theory, is an amazing aspect of all this, because this poor guy, his girlfriend's calling the National Enquirer, you know, everyone's sort of on the take, everyone's sort of angling, they all have their own angles in all this to probably benefit from their association with this guy. It's kind of sad in a lot of ways, even his girlfriend's selling him out to the National Enquirer. But talk about the Enquirer's role in all of this.
Absolutely. Well, okay, yes, there are phone records that indicate that Ginger called from the upstairs phone in the bedroom to the National Enquirer before she called downstairs to speak to Al Strada, Joe Esposito, whoever she spoke to. There's a lot of stories. But the picture that showed up on the front of the National Enquirer, first off, National Enquirer is the only publication in the world that was able to get their hands on a picture of Elvis in the coffin,
mm-hmm.
or whoever was in the coffin, Now, whether Ginger's phone call did that or not, I can't say. But Elvis's cousin, Bobby Mann, was paid by the National Enquirer to sneak a camera in to the funeral because it was ordered no cameras allowed. He snuck a camera in, and that is the one and only photograph we've ever seen of Elvis in the coffin. It's the only one taken. His own cousin took this picture and sold it to the National Enquirer. So now, was Ginger in on that? I don't know. Why did she call them? Was this all set up because Elvis wanted the picture taken? Maybe he wanted it out there so people in the members of the mafia that were after him would really believe he was alive. Maybe he wanted this picture out there. It's hard to say why that phone call was made, but it is very suspicious that that is the one and only publication that was able to get their hands on a picture.
It's very weird. You wonder, I guess at the end of the day also, you know, how many people you think in August of 77, what's the pool of people you think that actually knew what was really going down with this death hoax if it went down? You know, how many people, we're talking 5 or 6? I mean, you can't involve too many people.
Right. Yeah, you can't involve too many people. Now, I think there are people within Elvis's group that did not know about it when it happened, but have been let in on it later. I think there are certain people that I think he missed people. You know, he had to cut a lot of ties to do this. So in order to get his friends back, there's certain ones he had to trust and let in. I think some people were let in on it later. I think there are more that know now than knew, you know, on the day that it happened.
Yeah. Oh, I can imagine. Now, how about this is a two-pronged question. How about whistleblowers regarding the death hoax? If he let people in, you know, it's presumed that someone would speak out. But apparently, from what I can gather, no one ever has sort of broken the veil and given the true information about what happened. And additionally, you know, the government would presumably have to know about the death hoax. Do you think? Well, I guess maybe that's the question. Did the government know about all this?
Okay. Yeah. Let's get to both of those.
I told you I was excited, Mickey. I have. I'm going to throw about 1,001 questions at you, but I find this to be just stunning stuff. So far away.
Yeah. I think, as far as whistleblowers, I think you have certain people that will never tell the truth. I think some of the people that could have told the truth are gone, but they never would have, such as his father, Vernon. I think Priscilla and Lisa Marino. I think Ginger knew. I don't think she'll ever tell. I've actually asked her about it, and she won't say anything. She just kind of ignores you. So now you have people that have kind of blown the whistle, just like Marty Lacker did in his article for People, but have later changed their stories. Okay. So, you know, maybe they were trying to blow the whistle and then, you know, something talked them out of it. And then as far as the investigation or the government being involved in this, yeah, I mean, there's no doubt in my mind. Elvis was a full-fledged DEA agent. I mean, this is common knowledge. This is not anything I'm making up or that's underground or anything.
Right.
You know, I wrote to the FBI. They sent me all the information on this, and it's all available on the website. So he was a full-fledged DEA agent. He was involved in the sting operation of Operation Fountain Pen. The government probably had a lot to do with hiding him. I don't know if he actually went into the witness protection program. I've often wondered if he was just in the Colonel Tom Parker protection program, but I think the government definitely knows what's going on. And I think they helped. Whether he's in the actual witness protection program that they provide or not is up in the air, but I think that they were in on helping him pull this off.
Okay, yeah. See, now that I think about it and after hearing what you're saying now, it does stand to reason then. If the government did know about it, they would be colluding with him, and then, witness protection, they wouldn't obviously say anything even now. So it also is interesting to think, for the folks who are subscribers to this whole thing, that if Elvis may be 78 right now, it stands to reason that he'll die at some point if he doesn't come out of hiding. So maybe someday, 10 years from now, Elvis really dies at 88, and then they can come out and tell the truth. So who knows? We may actually, this all may actually pan out in the end. So who knows? You know what I mean?
Exactly. Yeah.
For the ardent skeptics, wait another like 30 years when Elvis is definitely dead, and then beat the drums about why we don't know for sure yet.
Well, you know, the full autopsy report, you know, Monty Nicholson, who was the veteran investigator that we talked about that's been involved in this since the beginning, he said in his interview that he has witnessed many, many, many autopsies and read many autopsy reports throughout his career. And he said that they are normally 40 to 50 pages long. They detail every single thing, any bruises found on the body, they detail everything. Now, the report that we have for Elvis is 2 pages, and it leaves out any important details that you need to know. Now, the full autopsy report has been sealed for 50 years. It was sealed by Elvis's father, Vernon. He ordered the autopsy himself so that it would be a private autopsy so that he could seal that. So it was sealed for 50 years. So in the year 2027, this will have to be released as public records. So who knows what we'll discover in this, you know, who this body actually was.
Yeah. So we only got to hang on for another 15 years.
Yeah. I've hung on this long, right?
Exactly, yeah. I mean, you got that to look forward to. Well, it's really all very remarkable. I kind of had this saved for the end, but I've really felt like I've already gotten sort of a good rapport with you here, Mickey. To smash the fourth wall here a little bit, like, how does it feel for you to be really such an ardent supporter of all this? And it really gets the short end of the stick in the conspiracy and paranormal community. It's like got to be one of the most ridiculed theories out there by a lot of people and in the mainstream media as well. First of all, I guess I have two, now I got another two-prong for you. A, how does that feel for you personally? And B, do you think there's any kind of agenda behind that just to completely discredit the story?
Yes. Okay, first off, this has been a 25-year uphill battle for me. I mean, I'm fought in every direction, everywhere I turn. Now, this has been turned into a joke over the years. Now, for instance, when Bill Bixby did his special in 1992 called The Elvis Files, Bill Bixby, you could tell from his interviews that he was doing on stage that he was leaning toward Elvis being alive. And, of course, Bill Bixby and Elvis were friends in real life. They did movies together, and you could tell he was leaning toward Elvis being alive. Now, 2 years later, he did another show called The Elvis Conspiracy, where he leaned in the other direction, and at the end of the show, he said, you know, sadly, I believe Elvis passed. And in the second show, they kind of turned the conspiracy into kind of a joke, like on purpose. The media has done the same thing. This whole thing has been turned into a joke by a lot of people. And it's not a joke. It's a very serious matter, but they have tried to do that. I think they've done this on purpose. So I feel like I'm beating my head against the wall sometimes.
Oh, yeah.
But I know I have solid evidence to back, you know, I don't say anything on my website or my YouTube videos. I have a series of YouTube videos of just me talking. I pick a different subject for each one, talking about the conspiracy. And, you know, I don't say things that I can't back up with some kind of documentation or photographs or something. So I know that I have myself covered, but they have turned it into a joke. So most of the world that only hears what they want them to hear, that don't really dig in and investigate, they think that I have to be crazy.
Exactly. That's what I'm talking about. I mean, I can imagine it must be maddening. Why do you keep doing it, though? You know, why do you keep fighting the fight to uncover this whole thing if you're just getting crap from everybody on one end of the stick and arguing with people on the other end? You know, at some point you must have sort of been motivated to throw up your hands and be like, well, you know, Elvis, if you're gonna come out of hiding or not, dude, I'm done. I'm done fighting for your name, man.
You know, I know I didn't become an Elvis fan until I was 8 years old when I was taken to Graceland, but somehow I feel like I was born with this passion. I just can't, you know, I do this completely for free. I do this because I want the fans to know that Elvis was not a druggy, fat guy whose career was going downhill. I want him to know that he was actually a hero, that he saved lives, that, you know, I feel like it's kind of an obligation at this point that I let the fans know the truth. And
yeah,
all of the people that have been scared or paid off, I'm not going to be one of those people. I'm around as long as I can be. You know, I wrote a book on the subject called The Elvis Conspiracy Encyclopedia. I wrote this back in 2000. It's on my website. I give it away for free. Just download it. I'm not in this to make a dime. This is not about getting my name out there. This is just a passion that I have that I think the fans should know the true Elvis.
Yeah.
And not what media has told us about him, that he was just a fat, overweight druggie that died on the toilet. You know, I don't want him to go down that way.
Yeah. Exactly. Now, you alluded to people being threatened and paid off. Have you personally ever encountered any sort of coercion from any, you know, nefarious forces?
Yeah, well, a name that I mentioned a few moments ago, which was Marty Lacker, a member of the Memphis Mafia with Elvis. He has been after me for a long time. He's constantly telling me I better shut up. I'm going to wish I had shut up. He used to say these things right in the Alt Elvis King news group online, so other people, you know, it's a public
forum,
so, you know, other people have seen him say these things to me. So, I even went to the Memphis Mafia get together in Memphis back in, I guess it was about 2002. They had an Elvis impersonator recreate one of Elvis's shows, and then after the concert, the Memphis Mafia all got up on stage and answered questions from the audience. And Marty recognized me sitting in the audience, and he gave me some dirty looks for even being there. He would not call on me when I raised my hand with a question because he knew where I was going to go with it. And, you know, he has gave me his subtle hints of threats over the years, but he doesn't bother me. I wouldn't still be doing this, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Clearly, you're a brave man, dude. I don't know if I would if I would go to an event like that. Did a lot of people? Was he the only one that recognized you, or were there others there that were like, you know, on your side with this whole thing, or were you just kind of laying low in the shadows a little bit?
I was laying low in the shadows. It was just me and my wife at the time. We were vacationing in Memphis, and we bought tickets for this Memphis Mafia get-together, and I didn't, like, announce who I was going in or anything. The year that we went to Memphis, everybody knew me when I got there just from being online.
Yeah. You know?
But when I went into this thing, it was just me in a suit quietly sitting in the dark table.
You know? You were looking around the audience looking for Elvis, weren't you?
Yeah, probably so, yeah.
F. Scott Fitzgerald once said, "The test of a first-rate intelligence is the ability to hold two opposing ideas in one's mind at the same time." Well, that's what we're asking you to do. Now, I'm sure if we took a hand vote, most of us believe that Elvis Presley passed away August 16th, 1977. Would you raise your hands? All right. Now, may we see hands for those who think that Elvis may be alive. Very interesting. Thank you.
You're listening to Banal of America Audio.
All right, I must say that I was inclined to go along with the first group. But we think that by the end of our program, you too will be able to hold two opposing ideas in your mind. First, that Elvis Presley passed away in 1977, and secondly, that he still may be alive.